Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
The Pet Doctor is brought to you by Dog.com. For everything and anything dog, shop Dog.com today for all the top brands. Greenies, Frontline, Kong, Nylabone, Royal Canin, and more. Shop at Dog.com and use the promo code SADDOC, S-A-D-D-O-C, and get $15 off your order of $75 or more.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
In the overall scheme of veterinary medicine, dogs have been treated like little people. With the advances in feline medicine, there has been proof that cats are very unique creatures, medically and behaviorally. 72 million cats in the United States prove to cat owners that they are the perfect pet. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
There's a movement afoot. ShoeBuy.com. Join the millions of people who shop ShoeBuy.com's over 400 brands and 500,000 products. Order now and get free shipping and free return shipping. ShoeBuy.com, the world's greatest shoe store.
Walk your dog in style and comfort. Enter the code DOCTOR, D-O-C-T-O-R, at checkout and get a 10% discount plus free shipping at ShoeBuy.com.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PetMeds. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PetMeds, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DOCTOR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets with your Paranormal Pets ghostly host, Dusty Rainbolt, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Cousins, thank you very much for being with me this evening. I have one of those very special veterinary practices, just a cat practice, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Now, conventional wisdom would say this is not the smartest thing in the world.
Well, first of all, I think, for instance, it's usually quieter. We have some nice jazz playing. No barking dogs. The fear factor is a whole lot less. The cat owners usually find the aesthetics of the cat practice a lot nicer. So there's a lot of advantages to having a species practice like that. Cats enjoy it as well. As I said, they don't have all the stress having dogs. And I think that we need to look to qualities, veterinarians, for that phenomenon that you mentioned.
I think cats are, I totally agree with you. I think cats are very good at hiding their signs of illness. You know, dogs are so overt. They're in your face. You come home, I love you, I love you, I love you. And, you know, they go for a walk. So you see if all of a sudden there's kind of a hitch in their get along, a little bit of a lameness. But a cat, when it's healthy, sleeps a lot. And a cat, when it's ill, sleeps a lot. So sometimes it's hard to tell what's going on. If you could break a cat's lifespan into life stages, what would you say to a cat owner? What do they need to be concerned with, for instance, with a kitten that walks through the door?
Boy, Dr. Cruz, you are so correct. It is sometimes very difficult to be able to determine signs of disease in a cat. And a lot of times it absolutely takes an observant cat owner to be able to tell this. You know, I mean, there are some obvious problems and some obvious signs. For instance, a kitty that seems to be eating at the litter bowl but yet still loses weight, I mean, that's clearly a problem. I know if I eat like that, I gain weight. But if a cat eats and loses weight, that would be a problem. And there are a lot of other subtle signs as well. So your veterinarian needs to be consulted when you even think that there's a problem, because a lot of times the cat owner is right. Breaking a cat's life, you have the juveniles, the kittens. That age probably goes to about a year or 18 months, and, you know, they act like juveniles. They're getting into trouble. They're climbing the curtains. They're doing all kind of silly stuff. And then you sort of get the beginnings of a mature cat at around 2 years of age, and that phase usually lasts till around 8 years of age. The big problems that you've got to look for in kitties with disease and oral health problems, assuming the cat is an inside cat. Outside cats of this age, you've got to be concerned with infectious disease and traumatic problems like bite wounds and fights with other cats. And then when you start getting over 8 years of age, then the kitty starts moving into the senior years. And this is when I think a lot of people sort of neglect their animal. And again, it's because veterinarians don't tell cat owners that this is a time where a cat should almost be seeing a veterinarian twice a year. And certainly by double-digit age, they ought to be seeing a veterinarian twice a year, because things could go wrong. And the good news is that if we look at these kitties a lot closer and do what we call senior profiles on these cats every year at this point in their life, we very, very proactive, pick up disease at an early age, get to the disease before it actually gets to our kitties. And this is a very, very rewarding part of, I think, of feline practice, because at that point in time, we can really make a big difference in the quality of life of a kitty and attack a disease before it actually starts showing severe and significant clinical signs for the cat. So that's a very, very rewarding time. And these are the animals that need to come into the veterinary hospital every 6 months or more frequently, and that's our job as veterinarians, to educate our clients that that needs to happen.
What would you say are maybe some of the 3 or 4 top medical concerns that a cat owner should or is going to deal with versus what that dog owner is going to deal with?
Let's see. I'm in New Orleans, so we may have a little bit different commonality of clinical signs than perhaps in other areas. But the things that we see down here a lot are, and we're talking about all ages of cats, I would assume skin disease and dermatologic problems. We see urinary tract problems a lot. And I'm talking upper and lower urinary tract problems. By that, I mean kidney problems and bladder problems. And also, we see a lot of hormone problems, endocrine problems, problems in the thyroid gland, and also we see a lot of diabetes in the cat. And people don't realize this, one of the risk factors of diabetes in the cat is overweight cats, just like it is in people. And, you know, the good old New Orleans cooking. And so we see a lot of kitties that tend to have more weight than they really need or that's healthy for them, and we see a large population of diabetic cats. And so that's a hormone disease, because diabetes, of course, is a lack of insulin. This would be the 3 big areas where we see problems.
A lot of people will think the cats are supposed to be chubby. They're supposed to look like a meatloaf. You're saying they're not supposed to look like that meatloaf. But how do you keep the weight under control? Because you put the food down and you're gone for the day and your cat just kind of keeps nibbling.
And I think that's a big mistake that people make. And as you said, people think a cat is supposed to be fat. But just like a person who is overweight, obesity has its cost, and a cat as well. So the bottom line is, and this is, you know, nutrition is really a rapidly changing area in feline medicine. And I think what most people will tell you is that a cat's diet should be lower in calories as a cat matures, perhaps certainly lower in carbohydrates than a lot of food that's out there. And I think that when your veterinarian gets a chance to examine your cat yearly, as your veterinarian should be doing, then a discussion about your cat's optimal weight should be had, and some cats need to, quite frankly, go on a diet. And that's something we do a lot at the Cat Practice in New Orleans. That's the name of my feline hospital. And that's something we do a lot. And we have a lot of our kitties on diets to try to get them down to their optimal weight and stave off some of the problems we've discussed.
Okay, I'm going to be forward and aggressive and saying, I'm that cat owner. I have three cats. One of my cats is chubby. The other one is just fine. And the other one is skinny. How do you expect me, Dr. Cousins, to feed these cats, what, three different foods in three different places? How am I supposed to do this?
Well, I mean, and that is a problem. And certainly, you know, most people that have cats absolutely have more than one. And to be perfectly honest with you, that's really the only way you can do it. You've got to feed these kitties episodically. You've got to split their food up. And then when the time comes for them to finish eating and to keep these guys from cross-pollinating, you've got to take food up. And that's just the way it's got to be done. There isn't any easier way to do that.
I think that wives' tale that so many of us, the urban legend that cats won't overeat, they'll just nibble what they need, that's no longer true, that's for sure, especially those indoor cats.
That's absolutely correct. Cats will gorge on food every bit as much as a dog will, and they will become overweight.
So when you're putting these kitties on a diet, basically pick up the food, how about diet foods? Do you find that they're helpful?
Absolutely, and that's one of the mainstays of our therapy, is not only do we restrict the quantity of food, but we alter the quality of the food so that these kitties are getting less carbohydrates and less fats in their diet to try to get them to lose weight. It's the same recipe for people. We've got to be a little bit careful about how we do it, of course, in the cat, but certainly it's the same recipe. We change the quantity and the quality of food, because as you pointed out, most people free feed their cat. They have no idea how much that cat eats throughout the day. And so what we do is we say your cat can only have X amount of food for a 24-hour period, and that's all your cat can get. And we have our clients measure out the food that they give their kitties in a 24-hour period, and they use a special food manufactured to lose weight in the cat.
You had mentioned being careful with weight loss, and I know sometimes with people having cat owners, having the best of intentions, say, okay, here's the new food, kitty. Oh, you don't like it? Tough. I'm leaving it down, and if you don't eat it, fine. That's all you're going to get. And then they run into problems. Could you kind of chat about that one a little bit?
Sure, Dr. Cruz, and that's one of the big problems that people run into, is they sort of cold turkey a cat from one food to another. In other words, they switch from cat food A to cat food B. And what we've found out is that that situation works best if you're going to transition a cat from one food to another, is if you take some time and slowly wean the cat onto the new food. A lot of people don't realize that cats not only eat for taste, but they eat for shape of food. So if they're used to, say, a kibble that's star-shaped, for instance, and now you're going to feed a kibble that is barrel-shaped, just the very change in the shape of the food might alter the cat's appetite or the cat's willingness to eat that food. So what we usually recommend an owner do is to take some time, could be 2 weeks, could be 3 weeks, there's really no set formula, to gradually wean the cat from food A to food B and give that animal time to get used to not only the palatability of the different food, but also the feel of the different food in the mouth.
Boy, they really are little finicky cats. The shape as well as the taste makes a difference for these babies.
It certainly does. And sometimes feeding a cat dry food, if a cat has been on canned food or vice versa, also is an effort. And again, the same rule applies. Mix the two foods together. Use a little bit of the food that you're trying to wean the cat onto initially, and then gradually increase the percentage as time goes on. So, you know, patience is the key here. But trying to hit the home run right away is going to result in failure more often than not.
One of the questions I'm frequently asked, and I've spoken to a lot of specialists, they have their own opinions, and nobody seems to agree. I'll now ask yours. Do you prefer canned food or dry food as being a healthier choice for nutrition?
The trend in feline medicine right now is to go to a more canned food-based diet. But that's just a general statement. It really depends a lot on the type of food and the component of the nutrient and the nutrient mixture in that food. But in general, in feline medicine, the trend is now to go to a more canned food. Some of the dry foods, and the reason for that is because some of the dry foods tend to be super high in carbohydrates. That's how we're putting on a lot of weight on a lot of our feline patients, and that's how we're getting in trouble with diabetes, just like in people.
All right, so we have this little kitty who now hopefully is going to lose weight. What are some of the other real health concerns? You're in New Orleans. There's a lot of humidity. I've heard you speak, and speaking on something a lot of people don't think about, heartworm.
Oh, yeah. Heartworms in cats is a big threat, just as it is in dogs, in areas where heartworms in dogs exist. Perhaps a brief little explanation of the biology of this parasite is important. Heartworms in the cat, just as heartworms in the dog, are transmitted by mosquitoes. But not only any mosquito, it's got to be a mosquito that feeds freely between dogs and cats, and not every species of mosquito does that. Now, in my area, in southeastern Louisiana, the mosquito is extremely prevalent. In fact, it probably could be considered to be our state bird. And the mosquito, we have several species of mosquitoes that feed freely between dogs and cats. Therefore, the prevalency rate of heartworms in kitties is extremely high in this area, predictably. Every cat that comes to the cat practice their owners are counseled to put their animal on heartworm prevention. And it's a topical product that we use. It's a little liquid that we put on the back of the neck, and we apply it once a month. And the problem with heartworms in cats is that they're very, very sneaky, and that a lot of times the clinical signs of heartworms in cats are hidden. If a cat has heartworms, it can, of course, be clinical, and some of these clinical signs include coughing and chronic vomiting. In veterinary medicine, sort of in the olden days, we used to call cats that cough like that cats with asthma. We have since learned through a lot of the research that's been done that a lot of these cats that were so-called asthmatic kitties actually have heartworm disease. And so coughing cats at the cat practice we take very seriously, and we try to look for heartworms in these cats. And the diagnosis of heartworms in the cats, oh, by the way, is a very, very difficult one. It's not easy. It's not very straightforward. And there is no good treatment for heartworms in the cat as well. We can control the coughing signs with certain medications. However, if the cat is infected with a heartworm, there is no good treatment to get rid of that parasite as there is in the dog. So we're pretty much left with just the concept of prevention to keep our kitty safe and free from clinical signs.
But Dr. Cousins, my cat never goes outside, so why do I have to be concerned with heartworm? And a vomiting cat is pretty par for the course. All cats vomit.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not suggesting that heartworm disease is the only cause for a vomiting cat. It is a cause of a vomiting cat, but it's certainly not the only cause for a vomiting cat. As far as your kitty being inside, a couple of interesting facts about that. Certainly, in southeast Louisiana, I dare say in the whole southeastern part of the United States, if you walk outside and leave your door cracked for a half a second, there's a real good chance a mosquito will be able to fly in your house. And as pointed out by a lot of the research at Auburn University, that inside cat is now at risk for heartworms because the formula is very simple. Mosquito plus cat equals risk. And it doesn't matter if that cat is sitting on the couch or an easy chair and there's a mosquito in the house, or if that cat is sitting underneath a bush, and it's at twilight when the mosquito population is a lot more intense. So if a cat is in the same general area as a mosquito, that cat becomes at risk. So certainly, you know, an inside cat is not immune to being bit by mosquitoes in areas where there are a lot of mosquitoes. And I know, for instance, in some other areas up in the Mississippi and Ohio River valleys, even more northern locations than we are, there are mosquito seasons when there's tons of mosquitoes outside. And once more, if you walk outside, you've got your hands full, you don't get a chance to close the door right away, and the door opens, mosquitoes fly inside your house, your cat is now at risk for heartworm disease. Once again, best to put that kitty on prevention, and you don't have to worry about it.
Well, one of the things that I'm not worried about is the fact that people are going to continue to listen to Dr. Cousins because he has some great information on kitties. And the first half of the show has just flown by. So we're going to stop for a moment so we can have a commercial, and we'll be right back with the pet doctor. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
At Petco, we really love pets. There isn't anything we won't do to make sure they're getting the best products and the best care. So when you ask us a question like,
"So how do you feel about cat condos?"
we can say from experience,
"Feels like home for her."
Enter the code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
Hello?
Danica, where have you been?
Oh, Grandma, I've been busy, you know, racing, GoDaddy girl.
Oh, I built my own online store with GoDaddy.
Really? Let me see. GrandmasAuction.com? Hey, aren't those Grandpa's golf clubs?
Grandma needs her bingo money.
Use promo code DOCTOR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get a .com domain name for just $7.49 at GoDaddy.com.
The question, what do I want? What do I need? I'll take affection. I really should mention. I need time. I need love. I crave attention.
Love My Pets, the new single by Mark Winter. Available in iTunes.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Dock. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Cousins, I know what you're saying. You know, things fly through the door, and my cats are indoor animals, and all of a sudden, the fly comes in, or a moth comes in, and they think, ooh, something to chase. So, yes, yeah. All those kitties can be at risk.
Absolutely.
And what I'd like to now chat about is early spay and neuter. Early spay, for the longest time, we're recommending it for cats and dogs. Dogs, I would always say that, boy, you spay it before their first heat cycle, you can decrease the chances of breast cancer by about 98%. And now some information is coming out on the larger breed dogs in particular, that these hormones might be a bit of a protectant for their joint health, their bone health in particular, for things like osteosarcoma that some of these large breed dogs are prone to. What is the current thinking for early spay and neuters with cats?
I don't think there's been any deleterious effect shown by early spays and neuters. Certainly the shelters take an aggressive stance at that and spay and neuter these guys, you know, very, very young, at just a few weeks of age. You know, a cat has a different body structure than, of course, a large breed dog. And so the effects of bone growth, or the effects of hormones of bone growth, really in the cat at this point in time, there are no studies I'm aware of to show that there are some pretty problems with that. Of course, in the cat, you know, the big problem or the big thing that we want to try to prevent is, of course, unwanted litters, which is why we spay and neuter these guys. And, you know, the other secondary sex activities that go along with it, like fighting, spraying, and all that sort of thing, that becomes such a problem in the actual act of blowing in heat, that's such a problem when you live with an unneutered male or an unspayed female cat. But to answer your question, I don't think there's been any really bad effects shown by early spaying and neutering in kitties. One of the problems that they were concerned about a long time ago was the formation of or the development of blocked kitties because of small urethral diameters in neutered males, and that's never been shown to have a true correlation with early neutering. So really, there's no bad problems that I'm aware of, but certainly it can solve a lot of problems by getting early sterilization done.
That is a perfect lead-in, because I wanted to ask you, I saw a kitty this week and was very sad to see. It was an older cat, had a history of some bladder stones, and now this kitty was straining to urinate. Initially, they thought the cat was constipated, sitting in the cat box and straining. So I know it's gone by various names, feline, urinary urinary tract disease, FUS, idiopathic cystitis. That must be something you see a fair amount in your practice. How do you counsel these people for cats that are having urinary tract issues?
Well, I think the first thing that we try to do is identify that it is, in fact, a problem. And as you pointed out, sometimes when these kitties come in the door, the clients often mistake urinary tract problems for gastrointestinal problems, as in constipation. And so that bit of history has got to be ferreted out. Once we understand and once we maintain that the lower urinary tract is historically probably where the problem is, then what we try to do is talk to the owners and set out a diagnostic plan to try to understand what's going on in that lower urinary tract. And that usually involves an appropriate urinary tract workup. Usually we do some blood work. Certainly we do a urinalysis. And we take radiographs or we ultrasound the kitty's bladder to try to make sure that we can't find a cause of it. You would be surprised how many actual bladder stones we find in kitties that have this problem for the first time or a subsequent time, first time that we've seen the kitty, but that have bladder stones, which, you know, in our practice at least ends up being a surgical problem versus just a medical problem. Assuming we can find a discrete cause of this problem, then we discuss, you know, some of the possible causes with the owner. And, you know, therapy accordingly. We may culture the urine. We have a large number of kitties that come back with bacteria in their bladder, which is a septic or bacterial cystitis. Sometimes we find nothing in the bladder other than blood. And some of these kitties will try dietary therapy. But we try to look for a primary cause. And short of that, usually we go to analgesics, antibiotics, although most of these are sterile, and dietary therapy.
I think that's one of the things that's so hard for people, because you'll have a cat going, well, it's eating, you know, this food. It's supposed to be the quintessential, safest food to keep a cat from getting these crystals, etc. And sometimes I have a blocked cat, and there are no crystals, and they have the appropriate pH of their urine. They're eating the appropriate food, and it just seems to be bad luck.
And, you know, again, sometimes, well, let me even make it a little bit more global so maybe some of our listeners will understand. This disease mimics interstitial cystitis in people. And unfortunately, in people, the cause of interstitial cystitis is unknown. So in the cat, this disease, the cause of it is unknown. That's only because we're not clever enough to figure out what that cause is. I think at some point we probably will figure out what the cause is, but right now, a lot of these cats are going to go undiagnosed, and that becomes a very frustrating problem for the owner, because we also know that in a lot of these cats that have this lower urinary tract problem of undiagnosed origin, unfortunately, in spite of our best efforts, it will occur again. And that's when the frustration comes in with our owners. And it's a very difficult situation sometimes to manage, as you know.
Very sad to say, yes. And staying in the cat box, so to speak, is the problem of the cats who don't use the cat box. it seems to be that number one behavioral issue for cats. You know, they're not the barkers. They're not going to be the ones that are scratching at the door, sometimes scratching at the furniture, but it's that cat that you seem to clean it, you seem to do everything right, and it doesn't want to use the cat box. I have to admit, I have one of those. And what are your words of wisdom for our listeners who are saying the cat doesn't use the box, it sprays on my clean laundry, it pees on my bed, it poops in the corner? Do you have a quick fix?
Well, first of all, we've got to try to disseminate and understand if it's urinary tract problems or if it's defecation problems outside of the litter box. Those two activities have sort of got to, have to be separated. We want to make sure we rule out medical problems in either event, that the cat's not having any kind of medical problems. For instance, the older cat that suddenly starts not using the litter box, starts messing on the floor and defecating on the floor. This older cat may have an arthritic problem that prevents it from getting in the litter box. So we need to understand that the problem is medical versus behavioral. And assuming it's not medical and we're dealing with a behavioral problem, then we need to focus in on the environment to see if there's something going on in the environment that has sort of got the cat off its game. Is there an introduction of another animal? Is the owner changed his or her living patterns? There more, maybe not there enough. Is there another person in the house that's upsetting the cat? How about another pet that might have been brought in the house? Any unusual feline activity outside the house? Perhaps it's the springtime. The male cats are running around the house looking for that, outside of the house, looking for that queen that might be in heat. There might be excessive vocalization outside the house that we don't hear at 3 o'clock in the morning because we're sleeping, but your cat hears it. And so your cat maybe wants to mark territories, and these cats will usually urinate underneath portals of entry in the house, like windows or doors, because perhaps they're concerned about the outside cats coming in, and they know that's how people ingress and egress out of the house. So they'll mark those territories. That's a clear-cut sign that there may be something going on outside. So we try to determine if there is a behavioral problem that is upsetting the animal. Now, short of that, a lot of these patients may have to go on certain behavioral medications that might be effective. For instance, tricyclic antidepressants or SSRIs like fluoxetine and sometimes even Paxil can be very effective in stopping these kitties from going on the going outside of the litter box. So, you know, really a good history is very important to try to understand what's going on with these kitties.
So pussycats on Prozac definitely is something that occurs.
Oh, absolutely. I've got three of mine on it.
Okay. I only have one. Mine is on Valium. So, yes. Whenever I tell a client and they're having issues with their kitties, I look at them going, and I have a kitty whose ears are screwed on too tight, and he needs to live on Valium. It's like, oh, you understand. So, yes, if we're going to be staying on kitties on Prozac, medicating cats, oh, my goodness. I have one cat. If she ever gets ill, she's going to die because I cannot get medication into her. She does not believe I'm a veterinarian. She just thinks I'm a mommy, and she's horrid. Do you have tricks having a feline practice as to how to get these kitties to take their medicine?
Boy, Dr. Cruz, that's so true, right? In the feline world, if you can't medicate the kitty, you're going to lose the case no matter what. And that can be a very, very frustrating part of feline practice. Do I have tricks? Well, we have a conversation with the owner. If we have, for instance, a med antibiotic, say, that comes in a liquid or a pill, we'll ask the owner which form does the owner prefer to use to treat the cat. You know, some people may have a definite preference. There are little things called pill guns or pill sticks, which help get the pill back behind that awful feline tongue and keeps delicate fingers out of kitties' mouths, which is helpful to kill a cat. Also, some of the newer, I guess, formulations of medicine come in a transdermal form, which means that you can apply a paste or a salve to the kitty's ear, and the medication can be absorbed through the skin into the bloodstream so that nobody has to fool with the mouth in any form. So these are all, oh, and there's pill pockets, which are little treats in which you can insert a pill, and sometimes if you're very lucky, The cat will eat those. Now, that's a dog trick, really, but some cats will eat pill pockets with pills in them.
And it's not a good idea to put the medication into the food, because kitties seem to be way too smart for that. It's like, uh-oh,
no,
there's something in my
like
food.
I said, that's
I'm
kind
not.
Of a dog trick, and that doesn't work too well for kitties.
It is definitely one of the most frustrating things. Dr. Cousins, if somebody wanted to learn more about you and all these marvelous things that you're doing for cats, who should they contact? What website should they go to?
They could go to catpractice, catpractice.com. That's our website. We've got a lot of this on the website. We certainly have a lot of things about senior profiles and why that's important, and also about heartworm disease. So please look at our website, and they could get a virtual tour of our hospital and most of the things that we've talked about tonight, Dr. Cruz, are on that website.
Wonderful. So you're definitely the believer that cats rule and dogs drool.
Absolutely. Dogs have owners and cats have staff.
Yes. And mine are saying, it's time for dinner. So we're going to have to say thank you very much, Dr. Cousins, for being a guest today on Pet Life Radio, The Pet Doctor. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz wishing you a fantastic time with your cat, dog, bird, bunny, or whatever else is making your heart full. Please listen again next week when we'll have more information on how to make you the best pet owner you can possibly be. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.